favorite scary movie. Have you checked the children?
It's all for you!
We have such sights to show you.
I know my projects. Voice carries a little bit more, so.
You're like, I want your bitch-ass voice to reverberate through the goddamn recording room.
AKA your living room.
Yeah. Fuck it. Let's do it. Let's go.
All right. I'm trying to think of a fun segue to bring us in.
No, we're done.
We have to.
I vote we just give the people a real take for one day when we're just spent.
Oh, yeah, because we have a lot going on.
Yeah, no, surprise. It doesn't fucking end.
I know. Well, welcome everyone to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster, and joining me today in this excruciatingly hot Los Angeles summer day.
Jesus, I know.
Is Anthony Fuentes.
Guys, we are fucking burning here.
It's
ruining our brains.
It's frying my brain cells.
It is. It fucking sucks.
Yeah.
Well, but we do this. Suffer for you.
Yeah. Today, we are finishing up September. We are almost to October. We are almost there.
Oh, my God. I can't even believe that shit. That's so weird.
It is almost October.
What's happening? Okay, no, let's not think about it. Yeah, we're here. September sequels. Woo! The last one of the batch.
It's going
to be a fun one because it's our franchise revival.
Yes.
That we tried to do. Or that Universal tried to do, obviously.
Yes. Yeah, that they tried to do, and I think it kind of missed the mark.
Yeah. It's weird because I feel like they were expecting more of, like, a franchise.
Yeah.
And they got, like, well, we're sequels.
Here. Yeah.
Yeah. There's more story, right, guys?
Well, today, as you couldn't have already told by the title, we are talking about, and we're getting back to our roots.
Mm-hmm.
As you all know, our very first episode was Psycho.
I didn't want to even bring it up. I forgot about that.
Our very first episode of this podcast is Psycho. It's very rough. But
very popular for some reason, and we fucking hate it.
We hate it, but we've gotten a lot of feedback and a lot of compliments on it for it being a very well done first episode. So thank you, first of all. But we did want to wrap up our sequel September with a little bit of a nod to our humble beginnings.
And again, one day we're going to do a Gus Van Sant style remake of our first episode.
One day we will do a proper remake.
We'll use the same script and just add a couple things here and there.
Well, we didn't even really have like a script really.
Yeah, that's true.
If I remember.
Huh? Much broader outlines.
Our outlines were more, because it was a scene-by-scene breakdown.
Mm-hmm,
so we didn't really have any...
We had a little history at the beginning, I remember.
It's just very brief, though. It was like, very, very brief.
I don't even want to think about us when we were youngins. But here.
We're talking about Psycho 2 from 1983.
Shit, that's a long-ass time ago.
Yeah, so we're talking, 20, 30? After?
Fucking A. 22 years afterwards. 22 or 23.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
But,
Psycho was 1960, so released 23 years. Story-wise, it took place 22 years. And then Thriller also came out that year, so, you know, it was a good year for things. Anyways, but we're going off Psycho 2, so IMDb says, after 22 years, in the first sentence, actually.
I know.
After 22 years of psychiatric care, Norman Bates attempts to return to a life of solitude. But the specters of his crimes and his mother continue to haunt him.
Good synopsis, I gotta say. That one's
that
pretty
works.
Good.
I think that's accurate. And I like how we both didn't even look at our scripts.
No.
And we're just like, there's an answer here, right? Oh, right away? Okay, cool.
Yeah.
This was written by Tom Holland, who worked on some pretty classic horror films, which we'll probably get into down in the outline, obviously. Directed by Richard Franklin, who did not have as many classic films in his belt after this, which we'll explore slightly also. Starring Mr. fucking Norman Bates himself, Anthony Perkins. Vera Miles came back also. Meg Tilly, who's has an interesting connection to one of our favorite people. Obviously, Tilly. And then Robert Loggia?
Yes.
Loggia? I can't remember. I think he's the doctor? He was Independence Day. Yeah. And he was the shit in Independence Day. He's pretty good here, too.
I know. When I saw him, I was just like, I know you.
You're like, yeah, dude, command us to kill the aliens, please.
Well, here's the thing. It's like, also, we're in the 80s, so you're seeing actors that, like, you know.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool.
They're like, and they're not quite the actors as you know them as. Yeah. They're not quite, he's not the general yet. He doesn't have that oldish look. No. He's still kind of a little younger, but he still looks like him. It's weird. This one actually was budgeted at $5 million, so pretty cheap. It was released June 23rd of 1983. I'm not sure.
Of course it was cheap. They had built all the sets already. Like, yeah, literally, that's like, true. It's the exact same set.
Oh, we actually do talk about that a little later down the line with the sets and stuff. You're right, because that did make it cheaper, actually. But I'm not sure how close or far this was away from Thriller, but it was in the same year. And it made $34.7 million, guys. It's hot. We're dying.
Anthony's really struggling. I was genuinely looking forward to coming over to recording today because I'm in the process of moving. So this is like
a
routine and break from my chaotic apartment right now, which is just in boxes.
Right.
Along with my memories and my life in shambles.
You're like, I'm fine. I'm going to have to throw out some of the significance. No.
Yeah, basically, right? Oh, yeah, gosh. I didn't cry over a coffee mug today. It's fine.
I could only keep two mugs in this box. No! Fucking mother! Oh, God. Anyways, so we're going to bring back our... We're doing our usual production thing over here. This time, we're doing our favorite, which is 80s slashers, but this is obviously a much different take.
Yes.
Much different take on 80s slashers. For purpose, actually. So, Ms. Webster, if you can...
Yes.
Let us know why this one turned out so different.
So, author Richard Block... Right?
Block or Blotch? I can't remember.
I think Block.
Block, probably.
I would assume. I think. Because we talked about this.
No, we've went over this conversation before.
In our first episode.
Yeah. If you're coming back from Psycho 1 and you go straight to Psycho 2, hello, we've changed significantly.
Well, this is a completely different format. Yeah. Welcome.
We'll throw some F-bombs, though, to make you feel familiar. You know, that'd be nice.
Author...
We cussed a lot in that first episode, yeah.
Author Richard Block, who wrote the original novel Psycho, had come a long way by 1982. The original novel was very obviously turned into one of the most influential films of all time, and with it came a ton of opportunities.
Yeah, big jump in career there.
Yeah. Block moved to Hollywood and began writing for television, most notably working on Alfred Hitchcock Presents. He also had many short horror and fantasy stories under his belt, but as the decades wore on, his screenplay career began to wane.
Yeah. Dun, dun, dun. I feel like we've seen a lot of this with writers also from the 60s who can't quite adapt.
Of course. Because, also you're looking from, like, the 60s to the 80s, you're seeing, like, in terms of, like, even just technology and culture, like, the jumps are, like, leaps and bounds.
Right.
You know? So I think for anyone who grew up or who... came into adulthood in the 60s, would have a very hard time adjusting in the 80s.
I feel like, because it's so commercial, right? We're in the Reagan years where they're just like, everything's fine!
I was going to bring up Reagan, but I knew you would, so it's...
Oh, there's some more Reagan in here. It's still the early 80s.
Most of what he wrote in the 70s amounted to made-for-TV movies like The Cat Creature and The Dead Don't Die, which is a great title.
That's a good title. I like that, yeah.
These weren't the most well-received films and probably starred the 1970 equivalent of famous TV movie actor Dale Midkiff.
Dale Midkiff, one of our favorites. Not in the scene quite yet.
No, not quite there, but we'll get there.
But the template for her career was being established at
this time. Oh, absolutely. Oh, famous TV movie actor Dale Midkiff.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. What was actually shaking the industry was horror. In the same year The Dead Don't Die came out, so did Steven Spielberg's Jaws.
This movie's my magnum opus. Steven Spielberg's like, this is my second movie. You ain't shit.
Right? When his miniseries, The Adventures of Captain Nemo, aired, it did so in the same year as John Carpenter's Halloween. And it was scaring teenagers in theaters around the country.
Yep.
Horror was moving past Block, but he always had one ace up his sleeves. Norman fucking Bates.
He did. That's true. He had the one character that established the rules for all this shit.
Oh, yeah. Since the explosive release of his prolific novel, Psycho, fans had been pestering him over several decades, wondering whatever happened to good old Norman.
Yeah.
There was clearly a demand, but Block had always opted to work on other things.
You didn't want to be in the shadow, I think, of, like, that big of fucking success.
No. Fed up with the direction of horror, particularly the rise of slashers who relied on shock rather than a compelling story, he sought to bring Norman Bates back into the pop culture spotlight and wrote Psycho 2 as a commentary on horror and Hollywood.
Damn.
Which, all right.
Yeah? This is the novel still.
Yeah. In his version of Psycho 2, Norman Bates escapes an insane asylum after 2 decades and pretends to be a hitchhiking nun, only to be murdered by someone who picks him up. Norman's doctor thinks he's going to Hollywood to kill the cast and crew of a film being made on Norman's life and goes on to oversee the production, only to be involved in another murder mystery with a director who looks strangely like Norman. In the end, it is determined that the doctor ended up being the killer, driven insane knowing his career was over after Norman's genuine death.
This is Scream 3.
I was gonna say! This sounds like Scream 3!
This is fucking Scream 3, and he did a Psycho 2 in novel form.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. This is Scream 3, without a doubt. Oh my god.
That's his big fuck you to Hollywood right there.
Oh god, he was so ahead of his time.
He was ahead of his time in bullshit.
Of course.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
He had a bad idea 30 years before the other bad idea.
It's true. Oh my gosh. Universal thought this was fucking stupid.
They did.
And rejected it outright, opting to make their own sequel and urging Richard Block not to release his version of Psycho 2. Thank Christ.
Yeah, however.
Richard Block thought that was fucking stupid and released it anyway to good sales.
Yeah, he did make a lot of money off of Psycho 2, actually.
Lots. Fucking A. Universal, not willing to let Block's take on the character take hold in the public consciousness, brought on their own TV movie writer and intended to make Psycho 2 a made-for-cable film.
Yeah, that's, of course. I wouldn't know.
So basically they just like butt heads and we're like, you're fucking stupid. No, you're fucking stupid.
And they're like, what's the cheapest way we can get back at this motherfucker? Made-for-TV. Yeah, okay.
Right. Luckily, that idea went the way of Marion Crane and was short-lived as well. Good lord.
Oh my god. Of course. So now Universal's kind of pissed because he actually found some success with this Hollywood, like...
With Scream 3 only 30 years earlier?
Yeah, with proto-Scream 3 that just slapped the face. And it was a success, too. So they're like, fuck. Okay, now we have to make Psycho 2. So,
and we have to do it better.
Yeah, so we're entering petty bitch territory here. So Universal's choice for the movie writer, the TV movie writer, is actually Tom Holland, who had just wrote Class of 1984, which was actually a theatrical release, but banned in several countries.
Corn trees?
Yeah, like you can't play this movie anywhere near a patch of corn trees. You fucking stupid.
They'll come to life and kill your entire family.
Oh my god, that's a weird visual that I just had with just like stalking coming out. Anyways, but Universal saw promise in this young writer and entrusted him with the future of what was quickly becoming, in their eyes, the Psycho franchise. So once they got the taste for it, they're like, fuck it, like, we got the property, let's turn this into something. So in an effort to hedge their bets, though, and bring some authenticity to the project, they brought in Alfred Hitchcock's student, Australian director Richard Franklin. Now, Franklin was actually a former musician, but he chose a film career when his band, the Pink Finks, saw no notable chart success.
Hmm.
Yeah, they actually did, like, studio albums, all the stuff, and they just didn't make anything.
It just didn't work out for them.
It just petered off, yeah. Mm. But then he decided to go to USC, where he actually learned the craft of directing alongside some people you might recognize. I don't know, fucking George
some
Lucas.
Some names?
Yeah.
What?
Robert Zemeckis, and then, oh, I don't know, fucking John Carpenter. So he was part of that class at USC, which is a pretty big deal, obviously, because those guys wanted to do Star Wars, Back to the Future, and our favorite Halloween, which is coming in a little bit.
You know what? With USC being around the corner from where we're currently sitting, I'm just like, I wonder who's sitting there now.
I know, right? Three assholes.
Yeah. Well, also, like, I would say George Lucas, I mean, I can't speak to our friend Robert over here, but I do love Back to the Future. Mm-hmm. But
he did Forrest Gump also.
I'm not a huge Forrest Gump fan, sorry.
He did The Polar Express.
Ah, great. Good.
Awesome. You're like, oh, okay, he did? Fuck him.
But anyway, between, like, George Lucas and John Carpenter, like, I would hate to be in a film class with
them. Oh, I know, they're just showing everyone up.
They're just huge. They would, like, I would have hated to have been in a film class with
them. They picked the fucking C student in the class. They're like, ah, oh, we can't get those guys. Richard Franklin.
Yeah. Like, I just, I do not think they would have been fun classmates to engage and debate with.
John Carpenter's contrarian ass in there. Lucas being all mumblecore. Fucking yeah.
No, yeah, George Lucas being, again, and probably an emo little bitch.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Oh, what a time in the fucking 60s. Anyways, Franklin was actually obsessed with Alfred Hitchcock, though. Like, after seeing Psycho at the age of 12. So he saw it pretty early.
Yeah.
But when he was a student, he actually tried to arrange for a screening of the Hitchcock film Rope. And somehow, in this laborious process of getting the film of... Or shoot... play a film in the theater, he actually ended up on a phone conversation with the director himself.
Nice.
Yeah. So Franklin actually used this opportunity to ask Hitchcock to give a lecture at USC. And because of that, they became really good friends.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Also, Rope is a fantastic movie, and I would love to cover
it. Can we cover it?
Love to cover it one day.
Oh, that would be probably one of the earliest Hitchcock films we can cover, too, huh? So we can go origin status there.
Yeah, probably. I mean, yeah, I mean, we'd have to look into it. But yeah, Rope is a pretty good one.
Yeah.
And it's not so much as a horror film, as more of it is like mystery and
thriller
suspense.
Kind of thing.
But
yeah.
I mean, it's freaking...
We all have birthday months coming up. And I like the one-shot thing it does in there, too.
Mm-hmm.
It keeps that continuous shot thing going.
He did, like, Yeah, there was a lot.
You're like, yep, good film.
Well, I could go into it, but then we would be talking about it for 20 minutes.
Yeah, that's true, right. After an Australian film career consisting of police dramas, a sex comedy, one brief foray into softcore pornography, and a cult horror film, Richard Franklin.
All right.
Yeah, he had a career
quite,
when he went back to Australia.
That's quite a filmography, I gotta say.
Yeah, but Franklin would actually establish himself in 1981 with Road Games, which starred Jamie Lee Curtis, who he met while visiting John Carpenter on the set of The Fog. The film was actually really heavily Hitchcock-inspired, and the studios saw this, and they're like, oh, he can do it.
Yeah.
He knows what that style looks like, and obviously he's a student, so yeah, he was able to emulate it pretty well. But if we remember, in Halloween 2, we talked about Road Games briefly, because that was actually the last slasher Jamie Lee Curtis was in. Yeah, but they billed Halloween 2 as her final Scream Queen appearance. But nope. Richard Franklin got her.
Yeah.
Yep. Franklin was then offered the job of directing Psycho 2, and at last he was able to return to Hollywood in good old Los Angeles.
Woohoo!
I know. Anyways, the assistant director of the first film, Hilton A. Green, was asked if he wanted to produce Psycho 2, though he did fear, actually, that Hitchcock would not approve of a sequel to any of his films. He actually consulted the daughter of Hitchcock, Patricia, who thought it was actually a really good idea and gave her blessing.
Oh.
And probably really wanted the royalties, too, I would imagine. Also.
Yeah.
Because yeah. I'd be like, yeah, fucking, you know, what is it? Universal wants to bring it back? Okay.
Yeah, right.
Anyways.
Very cool.
So now, of course, they have to make sure that they actually get the actors ready to cast this fucking film.
Yeah.
As always, Alex, let us know how they cast this motherfucker.
Yeah, so everything was set for Psycho to return to the now booming slasher genre, but they needed one thing,
just one,
to really ensure that the sequel would be a success. And that one thing is Anthony fucking Perkins.
That's right.
To return as the iconic Norman Bates.
Yeah, because it would not have fucking worked otherwise.
Mm. Anthony Perkins, initially, turn their asses down.
As always. Like, right away, he's like, nah.
No. The studio struggled to replace him, going so far as to suggest Christopher Walken as the new Norman, which, but Anthony Perkins...
You eat like a bird.
But Anthony Perkins decided to actually read the script at some point and learned he actually really liked it.
Yeah, he totally did.
Thank God.
Mm-hmm.
So, based on the strength of Tom Holland's draft of Psycho 2, Perkins reprised his role and thus allowed Walken to still have a pretty amazing film career.
Yeah. I mean, he'd won an Oscar by this point anyways for Deer Hunter.
Yeah.
So he was already like, ah, fucking whatever. Psycho 2? Mm-mm.
fine. John Gavin, who played Sam Loomis in the original film.
Piece of shit, dumb fucker.
I know. was unable to return to the part on account of him retiring from acting and working for Ronald Reagan and the U.S. ambassador to Mexico. Which, oh my god.
Yeah.
But they did manage to convince Vera Miles to return as Lila Crane.
This just makes me hate John Gavin even more.
A little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh
not
my god.
Not only did he, suck the life of every sin he was in Psycho 1 in.
Oh yeah.
But he also worked for stupid-ass Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, he was a miserable bitch.
He was. Oh my gosh.
But also, the whole, I don't know, the whole thing was just weird.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about it in, I'm sure, in the plot of the film, but he, Sam, like, also marrying Lila. I'm just like, that's also weird.
It's a little incestuous right there. But Vera Miles, though, coming back, they needed that shit.
Yeah,
that's a shot in the arm right there.
Yeah. But Patricia Hitchcock floated around the idea of using Jamie Lee Curtis as Mary Samuels. But the actress had just retired from her status as a Scream Queen and was unavailable, which...
Yeah. That actually would have been good, though.
That would have been,
been good.
That would have just been, like, a little chef's kiss of just, like, perfect.
Oh,
that would
have been, like, the ultimate blessing right there.
It's true.
Damn.
However, there are silver linings. They eventually settled upon Meg Tilly, the younger sister of Jennifer Tilly.
Yay! Our fucking favorite person in the world.
Yes. You should
follow her Instagram because she's living the goddamn life right now.
Oh, yeah. Jennifer Tilly is, like, living her best life.
Dude, I'm sure Meg Tilly's doing pretty good,
too. Well, I mean,
you can kind of see a similarity
there. There's resemblance, for sure. Music was of major importance to the franchise, so they went with composer Jerry Goldsmith after briefly flirting with the idea of using John Williams. Goldsmith, however, was very close friends with original Psycho composer Bernard Herrmann and was thus given the job.
Nice, okay.
And the music was pretty... awesome.
I love the music in this, actually. I don't think John Williams would have been a good idea.
Yeah.
No, he would not have been. He'd have been too John Williams-y about it.
The film also needed to look amazing, so they tasked one of the best in the business for horror films at the time, and a very familiar name on this podcast, cinematographer Dean Cundey.
That's right. Our fucking other boy, for some reason.
Somehow Dean Cundey just keeps popping up.
Right? In all of our goddamn movies. He made the look of 80s slashers good.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he can really say, I made this shit look good.
Yeah, exactly.
But he had just wrapped up work on Halloween 2 and was just a few years away from Back to the Future.
Yeah, so he's just changing the game left and fucking right. Dean Cundey, goddamn.
Yeah. Now that all of the pieces were in place, it was time for Universal to see if they can create a sequel to one of the most beloved and fundamental horror films of all time.
Damn, and they just
They do it, Anthony?
I don't know. they definitely actually did it. But like, let's see how they succeeded in that one. But luckily for the filmmakers, the original Bates Motel, or the Bates Mansion, actually, it was still on Universal's lot and available for use. Eh?
Yeah.
But on the flip side, the motel had actually long since been demolished, and it was no longer part of the set. So production designer John Corso used as many production photographs as he could to recreate the motel portion of this from scratch. And since the lot itself didn't have the same backdrop as it was before, matte paintings were actually used to provide a background as the exterior did not look like anything close to what it was before. So the filmmakers also used the courthouse square on the Universal lot.
I fucking could tell.
Dude.
I've talked about this before, and I will talk about it again, I'm sure, but I have a Universal Studios pass.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite things to do is to get drunk, go on the studio tour.
The studio tour is the best.
Yes.
Oh, I fucking love it.
Specifically if you're drunk. Mm-hmm. Like, being drunk on the studio tour is probably my favorite thing to do in the entire thing. Because they sell beer right before you get on.
They do.
If you get a huge fucking one, you're great. It's awesome. It's fantastic.
I really love it.
Anyway, point is I love looking at the
courthouse, right? When you see it in any movie.
Well, also specifically because I most notably know it from Back to the Future.
Mm-hmm.
It's most obvious for me as Back to the Future. However, anytime I watch a movie that I know for a fact is going to be Universal, and mm-hmm. I knew for a fact Psycho 2 was going to be a Universal film, because obviously...
First one was,
Well, that, and also I knew that the mansion was still there, and I knew the motel was still the same one. So I was on the lookout for locations that I knew could be that were
that they can shoot under $5 million. You know, yes. Maybe use the lot where the rent's the same everywhere.
It was the back lot, so I could tell that they were using parts of it when it was raining.
Yeah,
like parts. I knew they were using the back lot for that, and I could tell that they were using the back lot for the courthouse or like the
courthouse area. The courthouse area,
yeah. And I was just like, I know exactly where you're filming.
And this was right before Back to the Future too, so it's like it's still iconic, but it's not quite the level iconography that it was before after that.
Exactly. And if you're looking at it with the mindset of someone who hasn't seen Back to the Future, mm-hmm. it looks just like a generic you know, sleepy town kind of deal.
Mm-hmm.
Versus if you're watching it post Back to the Future, you're like, is that the courthouse?
Is that the courthouse?
From Back to the Future.
It just corrupts every fucking movie, but I still love it every time. Yeah. So yeah, this was shot again. This is a Universal film to its fucking core.
Absolutely.
So it had all these Universal elements in it. But production was set to run for 32 days. And the atmosphere on the set was surprisingly positive. People really, really wanted to be a part of this film. Richard Franklin knew that the stakes were actually very high and sought to avoid the excessive gore and nudity of many slashers at the time. He was kind of trying... He was trying to do what Block was trying to do, which is create the anti-slasher. But he tried to do it, like, smarter.
Yeah.
Yeah, not Scream 3 it. But the
more like Scream 2.
Yeah, more like... He definitely was trying to Scream 2 it. But the press was also giving this film a lot of attention. Particularly, they were surprised as shit that Anthony Perkins came back. Like, that actually was generating a significant amount of buzz for this film.
Was he, like, retired from acting? Or was he just, like, not as much...
He was trying to, I think, curb up that image.
Or distance himself.
Yeah, distance himself because he's, you know, that typecast him after Psycho.
Right.
Motherfucker.
I remember we kind of talked about that in Psycho when we mm-hmm. first talked about Psycho, where after the film came out, he had just been typecast for the rest of his
life. Yeah, you're like, be a
career.
Creepy motherfucker and everything. And I think he was on his way from removing that reputation, but he realized that, like, fuck, dude, I'm Norman Bates.
Yeah.
Like, I'm fucking Norman Bates, man. Yeah.
Time to accept it.
Yeah, well, however, one person didn't know shit about Norman Bates or Anthony Perkins. This whole situation of huge buzz around this $5 billion film was baffling to Meg Tilly, who was actually not allowed to watch television as a child and had never actually seen the first Psycho. But for
does
some
that mean Jennifer Tilly like was
same
raised
upbringing,
under...
yeah, without television. And yeah, precisely, right? Or she was like the daughter, like, well, you can watch television. But Meg, you read them books.
Well, she's the younger one.
Meg's the younger one, yeah.
So that means Jennifer Tilly probably got it worse.
She probably, yeah.
Because younger siblings get away with everything.
Mm-hmm, that's right. But anyways, she asked a crew member very casually why Perkins was receiving so much attention. And this fucking infuriated the actor. He was mad. So,
really?
Yeah. Even though she had already filmed most of her scenes, more than half of her scenes were filmed, Perkins demanded that she be replaced. But this was very obviously rejected because they had just spent too much time filming already. The two stuck it out and they filmed the rest of their scenes together, some of which were actually really freaking intimate.
Yeah.
But they both pushed through and they're like, fuck it, whatever, I don't like you, but let's... Let's
well,
make the
he,
magic
did
happen.
Did he ask, like, why are you asking? And then, like...
I have no idea. Like, I just know that every source I looked at was like, he was mad. He was like, get this bitch off my fucking set. Like, he to get, like, to the point where he's going, the producer's like, I know we filmed most of her shit, but I don't want to see her again. Like, that's bad.
I know, but, like, also kind of a bitch move.
Yeah, yeah, the little diva-ish kind
of
move right
well,
there.
Well, it's kind of diva-ish, but also, like, I'm just like, my dude, if you had just asked, I'm sure she would have been like, oh...
Mm-hmm.
I grew up without television. I wasn't allowed to watch Psycho. I have no idea who
you
are.
Like, do you know how young I am right now? Look at my face.
I know. Also, like, look at, like, he, like, freaking, he is, like, so much older than she is.
Yeah.
Like, she is so young in this.
She's a little baby in this
one.
Yeah.
I don't even know how old the actress was. I'm, like.
I didn't even check it. I was, like, I just took it at face value. Like, she's just.
I hope she's not 17.
I know, right? For that joke, refer back to Friday the 13th Part 2 2 weeks ago. Yeah. Anyways, Jerry Goldsmith, our composer here, submitted his score to the filmmakers, but the song Norman's Theme was actually rejected by the producers and by the director. It would actually, though, later be used during the second segment of the Twilight Zone movie. Check back our old episode for that one. Goldsmith, however, wasn't a fan of how much the director wanted him to replicate the score from the first film. But he kind of stuck it out because, hey, he got the job to direct Psycho 2. Or to do the music for Psycho 2, at least. So the last shot of the film was actually being used as a Christmas card by some of the crew members, including editor Andrew London. So when it came time to market this bitch, the poster art, fucking Franklin, the director, hated that shit. Universal had a way different take than what they wanted. But the same editor, Andrew London, suggested actually using the Christmas card as the poster art. Yeah, and added the tagline, "It's 22 years later and Norman Bates is coming home." Woo. This would be the press, like, advertisement. Yeah. So it was originally a Christmas card amongst the crew, like an inside kind of joke, but yeah. You got to use it, and it got to push the film, and you might actually see it on our art. Just saying.
Is the last shot of the film, is that when, like, because that's Norman Bates...
walking? Is it? I can't remember, actually.
Oh, no. It's the outside of the house, and you see the light on inside of the house, mm-hmm. and you see the outline of him standing in front. Yep. Okay, because for some reason I thought it was, like, inside the kitchen after he had killed...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I was just like...
Which, surprisingly good ending. I don't know.
I enjoyed it.
I was like, because we'll get into it, obviously, right now. Anyways, but the film was at last complete, and Psycho would finally have a chance to become part of the public consciousness in the slasher atmosphere after 22 motherfucking years. So how was it received?
22 years. Yeah. So the film received mostly positive reviews from critics, though there were definitely outliers in that. I mean, as there usually are. Mm-hmm. Variety stated, "Director Richard Franklin deftly keeps the suspense and tension on high while doling out dozens of shock of recognition shots drawn from the audience's familiarity with Psycho."
Yeah, so they're like, he aped it well.
Well, I think that actually, if we're going to do commentary on commentary, I think that this is like, it encapsulates a really great point, is they play on the familiarity we mm-hmm. have already with Psycho as a staple of the horror, like, genre.
I feel like how they did the second version of their shower scene was mm-hmm. very, it's like, it knows you know exactly what all these shots are. Yeah. And they're going to play it just until you think something's going to happen.
It plays it just under on the nose.
Yes, like, right.
It's
right.
Just under on the nose.
Yeah, like, it could go on the nose. Yeah. And they're like, let's veer away and show you a little bit of information you didn't know about. And uh-huh. it's like, oh, fuck. Okay, that was clever. That was a clever spin on it.
It was a lot more clever instead of campy.
Clever, I like that. See, you should write for Variety. Fuck that shit. Yeah, clever instead of campy when it comes to referencing Hitchcock.
Yeah.
Yes.
The New York Times also gave the film a positive review, praising the direction in particular. So again,
Hitchcock student, yeah.
Yeah, I think that was a great choice on, Universal's part. Mm-hmm. For some reason, I kept wanting to say university, and I was like, what the fuck is
on wrong? USC and Universal, how about that shit?
On the detractors, though, our boy Roger Ebert was not having any of it, saying it continues the story, but not the spell of Psycho.
He does a way of using, like, three words to be like, fucking sucks balls.
Well, and he ends his review with the simple question, is nothing sacred?
Yeah.
Which sounds like something a 13-year-old would write in her journal.
Yeah, no, I read the review, and I'm like, he's a little, like... He's confused as to why this is even up. He's like, aww. Come on, man. Like, Psycho, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even with a few detractors, the film had an even bigger obstacle. It was Return of the Jedi.
Yep. That was a bad 1983. Also, again, good year for a lot of shit, but not for the opening weekend of Psycho 2.
No. Which was in theaters around the same time and billed as the conclusion of the Star Wars saga.
Yeah.
So.
And technically it was for like another 20 years.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, for a very long time. Mm-hmm. So in their defense, they thought they were done.
Yeah.
Despite this, Psycho 2 opened up at number 2 in the box office, just behind the third Star Wars film, which was in its second week.
Yeah, you just can't come across these juggernauts sometimes.
Well,
man.
I mean, it was, you know, it's Star Wars.
It's Star Wars. Yeah, it's fucking Star Wars. Yeah. Plus, it's a low budget slasher. They're fine.
Yeah. I think all things considered, they did pretty good. Mm-hmm. The film would go on to make over $34 million, which was several times its small
$5 million budget. I put a $5 budget on the notes. Anthony Perkins was $2. Richard Franklin was 45 cents. Meg Tilly was just on set. You know?
she was an unpaid intern.
Was like, yeah.
Oh my God, we have to keep that
we
in.
We do, yeah.
$5 $5 million budget.
That's a lot more several times over to get $34 million out of that.
Okay, $5 million budget and was considered a box office success.
Oh, $2 Perkins over there coming in.
It wasn't the cultural phenomenon Universal was hoping for. Again, Star Wars.
They should have spent $10 on it then. That would have been good.
It was very profitable and set the stage for two more sequels.
There you go. See, it worked.
Kind of.
Yeah.
I mean, do you know anything about Cycle 3 or Cycle 4?
No, I don't really
4?
Care about the other ones, yeah, to be honest exactly. with you. These are the only two of the first two that matter to me.
Yeah, exactly. Richard Franklin would shift his focus away from the franchise and work on his own projects within Hollywood. But after a decade, he would become disillusioned with the Hollywood system and return to Australia. Aww. Which, I mean...
Womp womp. Poor guy.
I know.
Yeah.
He had died just before he was set to interview for the documentary The Psycho Legacy, but leading up to the documentary, was very enthusiastic about the project and even wanted to lend his assistance, as his love for Psycho had not waned despite the fact that he saw it at the age of 12.
Yep, even since 12 years old, he's just still had a love for the franchise up until the end.
That's I think that just shows how impactful
right.
the film was.
And he was the ultimate fan, dude.
Yeah.
Since 12, and he got to do the sequel, which was considered the good one, you know?
I mean, that's also, like how David Tennant had loved Doctor Who so much, and then he got to marry the daughter of one of the doctors, and then become
a doctor.
The doctor,
yeah. Sometimes dreams do come true, guys.
Exactly.
5-star reviews, please.
Our dreams are very mild in comparison. Yeah. He developed a reputation as a phenomenal genre filmmaker, and Psycho 2 earned its reputation as one of the standout films in the franchise.
Obviously the most standout film being the number one.
Anthony Perkins would find his way to the director's chair for the next Psycho sequel, but we'll save that for another time.
Yeah, should we just try to... I don't know, subject ourselves to this one.
Should we subject ourselves to Psycho 3? Let us know.
Yeah, let us know if you want to hear more about it, because I know that one's, like, way different. It's weird.
Yeah.
But,
We'll see.
We'll see. Anyways, that's Psycho 2. That's the production portion of it, at least. So, long-time franchise revival. It was surprisingly successful.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool. And, of course, I mean, Perkins still, he's Norman Bates, you know? At the beginning, I feel like I loved it so much because I really wanted to catch up with Norman fucking Bates.
Well, here's the thing, is you don't see a lot of Norman Bates in Psycho.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Like, for the second half is mostly when you see him.
Yeah, and the first half, it's Marion Crane's story. Mm-hmm. And then once she dies, it's Norman Bates' story.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, like, it's more so, like... The story is around him. It's not from his point of view, that makes sense.
Yeah, he's like just the primary factor in what's driving the mystery of what happened to Marion Crane, you know?
Yeah, precisely. So I think to have a narrative that is completely driven by him, and then you actually get to learn so much more about his character, I think that's what I actually really enjoyed about this film.
And it still doesn't even have to... the shadow of Marion Crane is still here, too. So you still have that aspect of the film as well.
The opening scene of Psycho 2 is the shower
scene. Yeah, so Psycho 1, that's right. But, I mean, the whole Loomis family, whatever it is, like... is part of this film, too.
Yeah.
So it's still deeply rooted.
The legacy of Psycho 1 follows him through Psycho 2. So.
Oh, my. So, wait. What did you think of Psycho 2? Having seen it very recently, obviously.
I watched it last night. I liked it a lot more than I thought I was going to.
Same here. I was surprisingly okay with it.
I was pleasantly surprised with how much I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
It went a lot longer than I thought it was going to.
Yeah, it's a pretty long fucking movie, to be honest with
you. Like, there was a point where I was like, I forget at one point, I think I had like 20 minutes left in the movie, and I paused it, and I was like, how much longer?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
They could have shaved off a good 15 minutes.
Yeah, I was like, can we wrap this up, please? Because in the beginning, there's a lot of exposition.
Yeah,
like,
it's a very personal film at the beginning.
Yeah, yeah, it's definitely, because like, I mean, it's very slow in the beginning. It's very slow to build, I think. Because then you have Lila Crane, and you have like, it opens in the courthouse, and you have like, there's a lot going on to set the scene.
I love that courthouse fucking zoom shot they do.
Yeah.
Where Norma just with his face backwards back to the camera, and they're just like, look at this fucking psycho piece of shit right there. Oh my god.
Well, one of the things that I wasn't expecting is, like, this movie made you develop a certain level of, like, empathy.
Yeah, for Norman,
for
right?
For Norman, yeah. That I wasn't expecting, that I thought was very interesting, and I wasn't expecting that at all.
Yeah, because he's really, like, it makes you question, like, how rehabilitated he is, but you're also like, but you're close, buddy. But you're fucking close.
Well, it's like, you're close, but also, like, he's getting gaslit like a motherfucker.
Seriously.
Like, literally, people are trying to drive him insane. Like, he's being gang-stalked.
Yeah. Like the odds are against him, and like, the system's not working for him.
No, and it's one of those things where it's like, if you are putting someone in a situation who's already, like, unstable and keep, mm-hmm. like, poking at them with a stick. Like, of course they're gonna do some crazy shit.
He's like an alcoholic that came out of AA. He's like, okay, cool, but your only housing is actually in the basement of this bar.
Yeah.
That's how he had to, okay, but be sane and stay away from alcohol, huh? Bye, see ya.
Okay, and we're gonna go, and yeah. I'm gonna call you every, I don't know, week.
Yeah.
But that's it. And, you know, and it's just, I think it was, it was really
unfair.
Unfair. It was unfair.
Because he's actually like a, kind of a noble guy for like a lot of the film.
It seemed like he had genuinely wanted to do better.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know?
Yeah, he did. Well, even in his diner job, he's still doing his job. He's doing his job. Fucking that guy's messing with Meg Tilly, and he's just like, I'm not having any of this. Like,
yeah. So I think that was, there was a lot that I actually enjoyed, and I was not expecting to enjoy. Yeah. Meg Tilly's character, I was just, I'm just suspicious from the get-go.
Yeah,
no matter
same
what.
Here. Same
so
here.
I was just like, she's murdering people.
Right?
but, yeah, I thought, I don't know. There was a lot that I thought I actually really did enjoy. Yeah. A lot more than I thought I was going to. And it was really, really interesting.
Same here. The only part I think it does start to lose steam. Like, yes. Towards the end, I'm just like, okay, there's lots of twists happening. Like, you just threw in, like, you had a nice, like, human film. And then you got the plot going for like half an hour, and then you resolve that half an hour plot.
Yeah.
Like, it's weird.
And then it just, yeah, and then it does that a couple of times, and mm-hmm. then I think it does a lot to the viewer, to the point where you do have a couple of moments where you're just like, can we just have, like, a resolution?
A focus,
and,
yeah.
And end, mm-hmm. and just end the movie. Like, mm-hmm. there was, I want to say, like, at least two or three times where at the point, like, in the film where I'm just like, can we just end it? But
yeah.
There was so many, like, little mini storylines that mm-hmm. needed to get wrapped up.
And they needed to get kills in there too, obviously.
Yes.
And a reason for those kills.
Right, but there was like Toomey, like they needed to find
yeah.
his body, and that was never addressed. The teenagers who were
fucking in the basement.
Fucking in the basement.
Yeah.
There was the woman, like the woman that we all saw, and we knew he wasn't fucking crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we needed those questions answered. Like, there were
boy, did we get that one answered.
Right.
Yeah.
But there were actual genuine things that we needed answered.
Mm-hmm.
That we needed to wait.
Yeah.
And it just, they did, and some of them, they quite literally waited until the last second
they
to
did.
Answer.
Yeah.
And so I think that kind of,
it
didn't work in its favor. Like, it answered them periodically throughout the film and gave mm-hmm. us little bits of relief, but it didn't come all at once.
No, it didn't. It's a weirdly paced film.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that's the best way to phrase it. It is a very strangely paced film.
Yeah, I wouldn't say badly, but, like, weirdly.
It's peculiar.
It's very unconventional for a film. It's not like a three-act structure,
uh-uh.
really. It's
no.
like a super catch-up, like, dude, like, is this guy gonna be okay? And it's like, okay, but then there's, like, the real mother, and here's, like, the
and
family
then,
trying to sabotage,
right.
and here's all this bullshit, like, that we're gonna tell you about.
And then there's a moment where you're thinking, like, is Norman Bates, like, faking being crazy?
Yeah! Okay, that's actually one thing this movie does really well. It's like, you're really wondering how crazy or what's going on with
yeah.
Norman.
So, like, in, like, the moment when he was, like, on the phone, like, pretending to talk to his mom and, his mother, and there
mm-hmm.
was no one there, and then, what's her face?
Fucking Meg Tilly?
Meg Tilly runs upstairs and is just like, I'm your mother, like, turn, like, you know, and then he puts the phone down and he smiles to himself,
yeah.
and I'm just like, are you actually crazy? Or, like, what's going on?
I think all the, because that's, like, an hour and 15 minutes into the film. That's
right.
Where other slashers end. Or that's
yeah.
happening. And
yeah.
It's still, like, there's still, like, 40 more minutes of plot after that.
Exactly. There's still a lot that they have to flesh out, so.
But I feel like what's happening with him being fucked with in the beginning portion of the film, now, I think from that scene on, you're starting to see the cracks. And you're like, he can turn.
Yeah.
Which he totally does at the very, very,
very
end.
Very end.
Yes. So, a question here is actually, knowing how we're talking about this film and how different it is, would you say this compares to slashers around the time? So this is like early Friday the 13th Part 3, I think, is around this time. Halloween 2. Fucking all kinds of slashers are happening. Prom Night was before this. Like, oh, like this is prime slasher era. And they do Psycho too. So in terms of, how do you think it kind of distinguished itself?
I think that for this film, I mean, I think it's a good evolution from Psycho 1. Like, mm-hmm. that was one of the things that I noticed, is that it seemed like an era-appropriate evolution.
Era-appropriate, I like that. Okay, that's good. Era-appropriate evolution.
So it was gorier. Like, yeah. There were a couple kills where I was just like, holy shit!
Yeah, but they're fast. Mm-hmm. They're, like, super, like, rapid, and you're like, okay, so now we're in a different setting? What the fuck happened?
Well, like for example, Lila Crane.
Oh, hers was really sudden.
Hers was sudden and graphic, and I was totally caught off guard by that.
I thought she stabbed her own self.
Yeah.
For a second. But the way her fucking hand was, I'm like, is she just that dedicated to fucking with Norman? And then I realized later on, I'm like, oh, no, that was actually another person doing the thing. And it was like, dude, what? But that was graphic.
Yeah, it was graphic. But that's the thing. It's like, just the sudden violence and the sudden, like, graphicness mm-hmm. of it caught me off guard. Yeah. And I was just like, holy shit. And it reminded me that this was an 80s slasher.
Yeah, they had to up it a little bit.
And
yeah.
So it was that. And then when the psychiatrist got murked.
When did he get
stabbed by Meg Tilly.
Oh, right.
And then
right,
he
yeah.
falls mm-hmm. literally on the yeah, knife the thing, and it makes it worse.
That's right.
And I was just like, oh my God.
This franchise, even if you look at it in the context of the 60s, what the shower scene did, it's really good at making piercing wounds feel fucking horrifying.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, from like the first one, you don't get to see, you know, like, you don't get to see any, like, actual stabbing. It's mm-hmm. very, like, you don't get to see it.
Exactly.
And you kind of have to imagine it, and that's what mm-hmm. makes it scary. Versus this, you do get to see it.
Yeah.
And it's those sudden cuts mm-hmm. and that sudden jump that makes it, like, very jarring.
It's like if Hitchcock wanted to do gore.
Yeah. Yeah.
If Hitchcock definitely. Wanted to do gore, he would do it probably like this, actually.
Definitely. Yeah, I can see that. But
like their arms swing fast and like there's energy behind every hit. It's uh-huh. fucking, and it's just like done. It's really kinetic. I like it.
But to answer your question, I think it does because of the kills.
Yeah.
I think the kills is what makes it live up, like
be a little 80s legacy kind of film.
Yeah, because like it was the kills that reminded me that like, oh, this is an 80s slasher.
Yeah, that's true. That's very, very true. Now, what Hitchcock elements did you think were most noticeable about this film?
A lot of the camera work.
Camera work for sure. Yeah. And the integration, I think, of music. Because music is surprising. Because in other slashes, I feel like you have the themes you know mm-hmm. that pop in when you know there's going to be a kill. Like Halloween mm-hmm. and Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
Like, whatever. This one, like, the music flowed with the movie. And it was still very pronounced.
Well, for this, one of the things that I was most worried about and apprehensive about watching this movie is, like, I love Psycho mm-hmm. so much. And one of the things I was so worried about for Psycho 2 is that the film wouldn't look enough like a Psycho movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what, like, concerned me. But because of the direction and mm-hmm. because of who they got to direct the movie, I think that I was like, oh, okay, this isn't directed in a way that makes me feel like it's not a Psycho movie.
Yeah, that's not a Psycho movie, exactly. It doesn't look foreign, doesn't look somebody's trying too hard.
Yeah,
it looks like kind of naturally Psycho.
Yeah, it looks like a natural, like, Hitchcockian film.
Mm-hmm, it
and
does.
And that's what I appreciated a lot out of it. But it also wasn't, like, a mimic. Mm-hmm. It wasn't mimicking Alfred Hitchcock style.
No, you know what it kind of reminded
me of? It was like kind of embracing it.
It was embracing it, yeah. I feel like actually a movie we covered kind of takes this as like a template and evolved it in terms of look and style. It was Misery. Misery had a very Hitchcockian kind of flow and camera work to it.
And
I feel like this, they both had some similarities there, except Misery was obviously much newer and looked better because it was Rob Reiner.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know, something about like...
Wait, was Tom... Did Tom Holland... No.
No, he didn't. He did Child's Play.
Yes.
And Child's Play has a super Hitchcockian kill with the one babysitter in the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's like a really Hitchcockian kill.
Yeah, no, because for a second I was just like... Because Tom Holland is also a common name
Clearly, we bring him up and we always do the fucking not Spider-Man Tom Holland because we have to tell people it's not that kid.
Well, Tom Holland isn't Spider-Man anymore either, so...
No, was he not Spider-Man?
Oh my God, where have you been?
No, I thought they just... The Disney... And Sony broke up, but I didn't know he's not Spider-Man.
Well, yeah. So basically, Disney said that Spider-Man is no longer part of MCU.
But I thought Holland was contracted to Sony still.
Well, no, but because he was still in the movies, like, he's no longer Spider-Man.
Oh, fucking A.
Yeah.
Okay, well, whatever, man.
Yeah.
Working some horror movies or something. That hurts a little bit. Okay. Yeah.
Sorry, I hate to be the bearer of bad news.
Fucking
but yeah.
Just get my kitchen knife. Like, ah!
I know one of these days Anthony is really going to snap because I always am the one who tells him all this
horrible things that I'm just like, but that's not my expectation anymore.
I know.
But yeah, no, I think you're right with the look. Like, it did what it was. Hitchcockian enough and its own thing enough. And 80s enough. To where it looked like an era-appropriate version of a psycho film. Mm-hmm. Like this, and the palette itself wasn't too colorful, you know?
It was
blues and browns.
The color was amazing. It was an 80s film, but like I think it was still like kind of keeping in mind that if someone went from the first film to the second film, it wouldn't be too jarring of a transition.
No, because it's still the Bates Motel. Like, it's still the Bates Mansion and the Bates Motel are the main parts of this film. And
the mansion looked great.
It looked amazing.
Holy shit.
In color, it looked
amazing.
I mean, we've seen it in color going to Horror Nights, obviously.
Well, but you haven't seen it cinematically.
Oh, that's true. Oh, yeah. I didn't put this detail in there, but actually, the production designer, the interior that did all the interiors, she didn't have any of the original props to work with either. But her... So she had tried her best to emulate it, and her film instructor visited the set one day, and the dude, like, fucking praised her. Like, her old mentor was just like, did I teach you just brilliance? Like, how did you do this? From the one note that I read that, like, made her fucking day.
Aww.
Yeah, so she did a damn good job building up this interior, and this actually made me want to rewatch the Bates Motel.
Definitely.
The TV show, like, I actually really wanted to kind of watch it a little more after seeing this because they use like some elements from Psycho 2 also.
Bates Motel?
Yeah. But like with the town being kind of with like drugs and things like being like a big part of the local area, the thing being off the side of the road and not being well known, like these are all big elements in the Bates Motel TV series.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I didn't realize that a lot of them got their origins in this kind of film.
Well, I haven't seen the TV series.
Oh, you haven't?
No.
Oh.
I haven't seen any of it.
Yeah, well, okay, in the TV series, there's a big drug kind of like underbelly to the town.
Really?
It's like kind of dark.
Well, I know in the TV show, there's also the, it kind of touches base on the Norma Bates not being Norman's biological mother.
No, she's in the TV show, she's biological for sure.
Oh, okay.
He doesn't have a biological, the biological father's different.
Okay. Yeah, because I felt like I'd heard that or like I'd seen that explored somewhere else where like the whole.
Oh, no.
Okay.
In the TV show, there's a very, very mother sonny kind of thing going on.
Oh,
there.
No.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. One day we might have to cover it, to be honest with you. If you guys want to hear about the Bates Motel, we'll make Alex watch it.
Okay. Yeah, please. Make me
uncomfortable. Five seasons, but no, the first one and I think the last season are actually really, really good. But a lot of the base for that, I feel like, comes from this film, and that really surprised me.
Yeah, I know.
I didn't expect that.
I knew Bates Motel and, like, Hannibal were, like, those, like, really dark, kind of gritty serial killer type TV shows that people really, really liked, but were still on, like, mainstream television.
Mainstream TV,
so
not
could,
HBO shit.
Yeah, it wasn't like HBO, but it was, you know, it was readily accessible.
They still find a way to push the boundaries, which I think is pretty cool.
I that's kind of why I had kind of like waited on Bates Motel, and I just kept putting it off, because I knew like there was like some weird, squicky, like...
Yeah. Oh, it's... Oof.
And then I knew they had... Like, there was like a brother, another brother.
There was another brother.
Yeah, and I know the actor... And then I know Freddie Highmore.
I know fucking Freddie Highmore's awesome in it. But we're not talking about Psycho 2, but I do want to point out that if I feel like, you know, the original movies were about Norman, right?
Yeah.
It's all Norman, whatever it is. And so when I saw Bates Motel and I saw a brother, I was just like, oh, what the hell? You're changing things up. But man, they make that brother character the most noble fucking, like, fuck up in the world. You're like, it's a fuck up with a heart of gold. I'm like, damn, if you can make me root for a character like that, that's just trying to, like, it's just, it's good. So yeah. I highly recommend it.
I'll check it out. And then maybe at some point, because they're eventually in the podcast, and if people, like, are absolutely against this, let me know. But I would love to cover, like, certain, like, horror television shows.
Yeah, or, like an American Horror Story or something like that.
Or, like, American Horror Story. There's a couple episodes of, like, Buffy the Vampire Slayer that I would love to cover.
Oh, that'd be fun.
I mean, obviously not the entire series, because, like, the whole thing, I wouldn't call it a horror television show.
Mm-hmm.
But there are certain episodes that are absolutely terrifying.
And I feel like Buffy's episodic enough that it has its own, like, the episode themes can be wrapped up in one thing.
Yeah, there's learn a lot. Yeah, there are certain episodes that definitely, obviously, you need
stand
to
stand on their own. Oh yeah,
they can that's stand on narrative. Their own. And then there's some that, like, are strictly narrative.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, it just that's the wonder of OG network TV.
Yeah,
OG network TV was all about that shit.
Or maybe even Angel, because Angel's a lot darker.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, interesting. Anyway, Psycho 2.
Yeah. Sorry. Getting distracted.
Anyways, do you think this movie actually would have been different, though, with Jamie Lee Curtis?
I think it would have been different. Yeah, yeah. I think it would have been way different. I think
it would have got more 80s slasher of it, honestly.
It would have been way more 80s slasher, and I think it would have given it that, like, it would have dated it in a way that would have given it, like, that, like, oh, this is of that era. This is of, like, you know, it would have, it's of the Halloween era. It is, you know.
I do think I would have liked it, though. Like, I don't know why, because, I mean, Janet Leigh was her mom, of course,
right.
And, like, did Psycho, so to see her be part of Psycho 2 with the daughter subplot.
Well, that's the thing.
Or a niece subplot.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of it that's, like, it's on, I think that would have made, would that made it, like, on, like, I think.
Pretty on the nose.
On the nose, it would have taken people out of the movie.
Yeah, that's a good point. You're right.
Because, like, because the only reason they would have cast her is because she's not only, I mean, yeah, she's a scream queen, but also they probably only would have wanted to cast her is because she's Janet Leigh's daughter.
Janet Leigh's daughter. That makes sense. I mean, Meg Tilly did do a good job.
Yeah, Meg Tilly did a great job. And in no way do I want to, like, you know, shit on her performance, because I think she did a really good job.
Yeah, but I feel like, yeah, Jamie Lee Curtis would have changed the film. Definitely.
She would have changed it, and then also, I'm trying to find that other movie that she was in.
Which one? Around the same time?
Road Games. Thank you. I was like, Road something? But no, like, yeah, like, the comment I was going to make had something to do with Road Games. But no, it would have put it, like, in that era of Road Games, of Halloween 2, of Halloween, of, like, of Prom Night, of all these movies of that she was in that kind of created her little mantle of Scream Queen.
They were built around Jamie Lee Curtis.
Exactly.
We wouldn't have had a Norman Bates film. We would have had a Jamie Lee Curtis and Norman Bates film.
Exactly. Yeah, this would have, true. Yeah, Scream 2, fuck. Psycho 2 would have been a Jamie Lee Curtis's, you know, Scream Queen film.
Yeah, that's true. Very, very true. Plus, I mean, if we want a Richard Franklin directed Jamie Lee Curtis starring film, we just watch Road Games.
Exactly.
Which we could probably actually do. I kind of want to cover it at some point.
I would love to.
That'd be fun.
If the synopsis is what I remember it, I would love to cover it.
Yeah. Okay. We could definitely check it out. We'll see, fans. But last question, because, we burned through this bitch.
Real quick.
I know. How do you feel about sequels that come far after the first film? Decades-long franchise revivals. What do you think of that?
In general.
Yeah. How do you feel about doing that?
Like, do you have any other examples other than Psycho?
I did, but my brain is goddamn fried right now.
Oh,
they've done a couple.
Okay.
They did, I think, Texas Chainsaw Massacre was way later.
Okay.
That was only like 10 years, though. Terminator 2.
Okay, so we're not strictly sticking to the horror genre.
No. I'm talking about general. Yeah.
Okay, well, Star Wars is also one.
Yeah, oh, prequels. That's right. But, like, stuff like that, though, right?
Yeah.
That's actually that's a good point. If you look at the difference in prequels, like what eras they came from versus OG Star Wars, think about Psycho had that same time difference.
Yeah.
And different types of Hollywood it's coming into.
It could be done horribly.
It could be, because prequels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. Don't shit on the prequels.
I have to at least shit on Attack of the Clones. I fucking hate that movie.
Why?
I hate it so much.
I love it. Okay, we've had this discussion.
We haven't had discussion on the podcast.
We have not. But when Anthony and I worked together, we had this discussion probably once every couple of months.
Every couple of months for sure.
Definitely every couple of months.
Every 2 months, because sequel, bam.
Every couple of months, Anthony would bring it up, or it would come up in conversation, but I love Attack of the Clones. Yeah. I think it is a fantastic movie.
She stares in my eyes, I'm just, no.
Here's the thing, is like, like, I had it on DVD. It was one of my sick kid, like, it was one of my sick day movies. Like, I always watched it. It was, like, that and, like, Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, and it was, like, one of those, and, like, Twister. I had a weird hodgepodge of movies.
Twister, though. That's a good one. I dig Twister.
Yeah, Twister's great. Twister is what made me want to watch The Shining originally.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And how disappointed was I? So.
Let's see. This is... That's a wrong sentence. We're covering The Shining.
I know. We will cover The Shining, and my horror film opinion sacrilege will be laid out, and my shame will be laid out to bear in front of the entire
podcast. And we're
going to
screen The Shining on this goddamn projector.
I will watch The Shining. I will watch it on this huge fucking television. I will.
Okay.
We're doing that. Okay.
Because we got it.
I will give it an effort.
And for our April Fools, we're going to watch Attack of the Clones so I can also eject myself to some bullshit.
But no. The point is I think that it can be done.
Mm-hmm.
I think if it's done properly, because, like, I will agree, the original Star Wars, like, for example, if we're going to stick with the Star Wars example, the Star Wars... You know, the original trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was amazing.
Yeah.
And then the prequels artistically aren't as well done.
But they are entertaining.
But they are entertaining.
Yeah, that's true.
So I can respect that.
Yeah.
Because I was entertained by them.
And then...
given I was 7, but still.
Yeah.
And I wasn't as entertained by, like, you know...
The what? The new ones? New ones?
No. I wasn't as entertained by, like, for example, like, the original trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I liked it, but I mean...
Did it bear the same significance, though?
I enjoyed it, because I thought it was, like, a really cool movie, but it didn't have the same kind of, like, pew, pew action, mm-hmm. like, that
the 7-year-olds love, yes!
The original trilogy is a lot more plot-driven. It's a lot more story-based. Like, it took me forever for me to put the pieces together that Luke and Leia were related.
Like... Oh my god. That's true. That's so interesting, because I think, now that I think about it, like, it really it depends on where you are when you see these franchise arrivals too, because I was, when Attack of the Clones came out, my prime
you were in high school.
Edgelord piece of shit, just like, meh, I'm not liking anything right now.
Yeah, that's why you didn't like them, Anthony, because you were in high school.
Nah,
you were.
I loved Revenge of the Sith, though. When that one came out.
Of course you liked Revenge,
like,
of the Sith.
Yes.
Of course you did. Hayden Christensen was a little edge. Like,
he was.
Little fucklord edge boy who was just like, meh, meh, meh. I have too many feelings, so I'm going to be evil. Meh, meh, meh.
You're pregnant? Oh, shit.
Yeah. Like, of course.
Oh,
of course you liked Revenge of the Sith.
Imagine our age difference, though, like, now. But, like, date it back, like, 22 years or whatever from the prequels and do instead Psycho. Like, what? I watch Psycho 2 on VHS all the time. I'm like, that fucking movie right there?
Of course. I mean, and that isn't to say I don't like Revenge of the Sith. I love Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah, it's a good movie.
But it makes sense that you, as, like, a little edgy, like, teenager, would have loved Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah,
because that particular, like, darkness, whatever. I am, like, a diehard Obi-Wan Kenobi, like, fan.
That's true. Okay.
I am a diehard Obi-Wan Kenobi fan.
I do like me some Ewan McGregor as Ben Kenobi. That's true. I do.
So I love, like, the prequels.
What other franchise has been revived? Now we got to figure this shit out.
Okay, so Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Which I haven't seen, so I can't speak to that.
Mm-hmm. Let's see here. There was one that just came in my head, and it just fucking... I bet our listeners are screaming at their goddamn car
speakers. Oh, yeah,
speakers,
yeah. Their car speakers. I think, like, our friends are probably texting us as we speak.
Yeah, they're like, fucking this one, which I can't think of one right now, because I was... goddamn. There's going to be such an obvious one. I'm like, why? Why did I not think of this? Psycho. Halloween!
Oh, duh.
Oh, what the fuck are we thinking, dude? They went zombie remake. They went all this shit. But then they came back with...
I haven't seen any of the modern remakes.
Did you see the new one?
No. The one that came out, like, literally since we started this podcast? No.
Yeah, that we didn't get to cover, by the way. I wasn't that impressed, guys.
No, because you weren't that impressed.
I wasn't that impressed,
so
sorry.
I took your word as gospel.
I think I might be an H2O fanboy, but still. Still wasn't quite... But no. Our own fucking...
Well, they announced another one.
Two more.
Yeah,
shooting back-to-back Halloween Kills and Halloween Ends.
Yes.
With John Carpenter scoring them, obviously.
Yeah.
See, as much as I was kind of blasé about the reboot, basically, I, or the long franchise revival, which is what we're covering right now, I'm still hyped for the next two.
Yeah, so as you know. See, you're ready to get hurt.
Yeah, I know. This is as you know what? Yes, these long-standing revivals can work depending on how much of a fanboy you are.
Yes.
It really depends on your level of fandom there. Because if you go a little too much fandom, you're going to hate it.
You're going to be disappointed.
Yeah, but you go a little too little, you're just like, whatever. But if there's a sweet spot there's that they each hit you where somewhere.
You're going to be, like, happy with it.
Yeah.
Or if you're seven.
Or if you're seven, right? And Psycho 2 I'm pretty happy with. Attack of the Clones.
Oh my gosh. I am so sorry for the Star Wars tangent.
This is a sequel podcast right now.
Right now, this is a sequel podcast.
There are very few sequels as famous as Star Wars sequels.
It's true. It's very true. And you know what? But it's been rebooted, technically, or it's been revived 3 times.
Also, another one, Alex, that I fucked up. It's a very infamous franchise revival. The Godfather.
I haven't seen any of the Godfather films.
You haven't seen any of them?
None.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so a little history lesson here. Godfather 1 and 2, done back to back. Well, not like shot at the same time, but they were done in rapid succession.
Yeah.
And were basically considered one and the same, although the first one's still The Godfather.
But right.
2 and 1, they're like historic Academy Award winning landmark fucking films. They redid it 18 years later with Godfather 3. It's the same shit. It's of its time. But it didn't quite match up to the old one, so it's always like the bastard fucking redheaded stepchild.
It's like the black sheep of the family.
Yeah, because you're trying to do it like that long later. And it does the opposite, I think, of Psycho 2, where it really doesn't nail it.
Oh.
But like, see, that really depends on your level of fandom, because that movie was so freaking significant. Like, you can't just shit out a third movie like that and expect us to like it, you know?
Gotcha.
Yeah.
See, I'm trying to think, because there are, I mean, right now, in terms of, like, I mean, we're looking at revivals, we're looking at, in the era of reboots that we currently are living in, there are so many things, like, even...
We're gonna get a Saw one coming up.
Another one?
With Samuel L. Jackson is in the Saw movie.
Saw?
Saw is getting another one.
With Sam, what?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, go look up the news, I know.
That's a weird combination. But, like, I mean, in this era of remakes and reboots and revivals...
Exactly.
All of this, it's hard because there's technically a huge list of remakes.
There's a lot. Now that we're, like, uncovering more by remembering things,
Like, now that our memory is, like, actually, like, now that we're actually activating our brain cells. But I think it's really hard because a lot of people who are so attached to fandoms or so attached to certain films, they don't want to see it fucked up tremendously.
Well, I think they...
Or even, like, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
True.
I mean, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark was, like, my childhood. Like, that was one of the first horror-related things that I was allowed to consume as a child.
And it's so gruesome-looking, too, when you were younger.
It's terrifying. Like, but because it was a book, my mom, and it was designed for children, like, my mom was like, oh, how bad could it be? But still reading it as a child scared the fuck out of
me. It helped you develop a sense of, like, creep factor to it. But see, I think that gets to the point now I have an assessment here.
Okay.
So... A lot of these franchise revivals can go either way because I feel like these things become so cemented in our pop culture consciousness that people find different things they like about them.
Mm-hmm.
So when one of those elements is removed and discarded, then you get the other stuff which you don't like as much.
Yeah.
And people judge it based off of that merit because what they liked about that one didn't translate over or did translate over. But for someone else, there was another element they're like, oh, but it's missing this because these are just such pop culture staples.
Well, for example, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark is a PG-13 movie.
Exactly. It's a kid's horror, right?
Yeah, it's PG-13. Mm-hmm. It's mild, all things considered. And a lot of the people who read Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark are adults.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of the disappointment that came out of Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark was the... was adults expecting a rated R movie.
An adult version of the story.
Right, an adult version of a children's story, which they were not going to get because technically a lot of these stories, while they ended on a morbid note, they never technically ended on a depressing note.
Right? And as a kid, you're like, this is still more than what you're used to. Yeah. So you think it's like max adult stuff when really it's kind of benign.
So like, I mean, like they end in cliffhangers, but like that's all you get. You don't get anything after that. Like you get, you know, like spiders exploding out of a girl's face and then that's it. Or you get like, you know, the rat is actually, or the dog that they think they adopted is actually a rat, and it has rabies. You get a
stinger.
Yeah.
You get, just like this movie gave you a stinger.
Yes.
With the fucking shovel.
Yeah.
And the old mom.
Holy shit, right? Though.
No, you're right. They give you a stinger. Yeah. That's what propels those types of stories.
Right, but that's what a lot of people were actually disappointed about, because they thought it was like a kid, it felt very childish. Mm-hmm. And even for me, as I was watching it, there was parts of it where I'm like, this is very childish. But then when I walked out of it, I was like, it's a PG-13 movie.
Yeah.
It is designed for, like, a high schooler to go see.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a lot of elements that were actually very well done. And obviously, like, I mean, Guillermo del Toro's involved. So yeah. I'm going to enjoy anything he does.
So it's like, that's the kind of movie that those dumbass piece of shit children that were making out next to us in Midsummer should have been watching. They should have been making out to that fucking movie right there. They should have been making out
during Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. Yeah, instead they Midsummer. Fucking
interrupt our asses trying to enjoy Midsummer.
Which... don't make out during Midsummer. That's not a makeout movie.
Seriously. Oh, dumb ass fucking teenagers suck, dude.
So
teenagers.
Funny.
Teenagers. That's the theme of this episode. Me not hating on Attack of the Clones as a teenager.
Good lord.
Teenagers just suck, you know? They just do. is anything else? You got anything else?
I just wanted, for Psycho 2, my overall thoughts. I really enjoyed it. If you haven't seen Psycho 2... and if you enjoy Psycho 1, I don't think you'll hate it.
I don't think you'll hate it either. No.
I think it's actually pretty enjoyable. It is a little long, so, you know, take that into consideration.
And there are some differences.
There are some differences.
It's not a one-to-one Psycho,
No.
Yeah, it's its own thing.
It's its own thing, but it's still enjoyable. Mm-hmm. I loved getting Lila Crane back involved.
Dude, she's such a bitch. It's awesome.
Yeah.
She's just like, I got the solution. Fuck you.
Yeah, literally, she's just like, send it back. Kill him. Like, she is like, fuck this guy. But the fact that she even goes so far as to, like, she's trying to drive him insane because she's so convinced he's going to kill again. It's completely it's counterintuitive, for sure. Like,
it's surprisingly theatrical.
Yeah.
She's got, like, one of those, like, twirly mustache plans.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But then, you know, that plot twist at the end where it's revealed that, like,
With the other mother?
Yeah.
And
if you haven't seen the movie, it came out in 83. Get your shit together.
Yeah, but Norman Bates, they give us a stinger where Norman Bates is like, no, dude, I'm a fucking killer. And like that. Which I thought was pretty cool, actually.
But also, Anthony Perkins, his acting was like really amazing. Like, I'm so bummed that like he kind of had to take a step back from acting because he didn't want to be typecast, because he did a really, really good job.
And he looks like an aging boy.
Yeah.
he's got that boyish, like, chest up, but, like, skinny-ass arms kind of look.
Yeah, he has that, like, you know, he has, like, noodle arms. Like,
I feel like if I was a little taller, I'd be an Anthony Perkins when I'm in, like, my 40s around that time.
No, he had, like, I mean, he looked like... Norman Bates.
He does.
Like, he looked like Norman Bates 22 years later. So, I mean, it was done very well. So,
he's Norman AF.
Yeah. But I think I'm pretty much done. Is there anything else you wanted to add?
Like you said, watch the film. I think if you like the first film, just don't expect the first film, but you can't expect the first film because the first film stands on its own. This is an 80s film that does such a good job catching you up on Norman. It's only a shame that it runs a little long and gets a little too plot heavy. That's it. It runs long, gets a little plot heavy, but without those elements...
just get a little stoned, and then it'll go by...
Get your buzz on.
Yeah, and then it'll go by so much faster.
Right, I agree. And but again, that concludes sequel September.
next week,
October, guys. So when it comes to the horror podcast realm, guys, October is a special month. October is like,
specifically... for, like, even in general, for the horror film podcast world, October, of course, is a special month.
It's our happy month, dude.
It's everyone's happy month. So we are no exception to the rule.
We are hitting you with thrilled. Some fucking shit, dude. I mean, I feel like we had a pretty good thing going with the sequels,
I will be honest. There is no theme for next month.
No theme, but...
but we have some fucking... awesome picks for you.
Next week, we ain't talking about no fucking movie.
We are not talking about a TV show.
Nope. We are talking about something we'll, you know, tease on the Instagram. okay, yeah, it's going to be way, way different. We're going to have a guest next week.
Yeah, Anthony is bringing on a guest, and
it's going to be a long one, guys. It's going to be a long one. It's going to be a franchise. It's going to be horror. But you don't know what it is yet.
So
but it ain't no fucking movie. It ain't no fucking TV show. It ain't no special. It's something that I can't wait for you guys
Anthony
to
listen has
to.
Been thrilled about this for weeks and weeks, months even. We have had our October planned for the last, like, 4 months. Like,
yep. And in October, halfway through it, you get our 50th episode.
Yes, that is also something that we wanted to share. So as of October, I think by the end of October, it will have been a full 52 weeks, so it'll be our full year.
Our full year, that's right.
Our full year, even though I know we skipped a month, but that's fine.
Yeah.
Full
year's worth of time right there.
I know, but as of next week, it will have been a year since we have started the podcast.
That's right, god damn.
So, how cool is that? It's
Dude,
been a whole year, I can't believe it.
I can't believe we fucking made it.
I know, you know, it's something that all of our podcasting friends just said, you just gotta make it through the first year.
Yeah, and we did it, and it was fun as fuck, and we still have a lot of enthusiasm for everything coming up, because again, 50th episode's gonna be the shit.
Yeah, we have our 50th episode. It's been a year. We have next week is gonna be fucking awesome,
and we have a director we wanted to cover for a while that we're happening in there, and we got a cult classic for week two, and then we got Halloween.
Yeah,
Halloween's gonna be special, isn't it?
Yeah, no, we have some cool shit.
We got a lot
of
good shit.
So it's gonna be great. We have as always. I know I always say it, but we have always have the next couple of months planned out. So we always try our best to give you guys the best stream of content and give it in the most exciting way possible, because we never want to, you know, give you the same one note content over and over and over again, which is why we always try to switch it up and give you, you know, I know this month was all sequels, but you know, we try to give you different genres of sequels. So,
and we covered like a lot of decades.
Yeah,
surprisingly,
so it wasn't you know, one note on the decade. It wasn't one note on the genre. So we just want to make sure that we are always giving you interesting and
a claw variety pack, if you will, episodes.
A claw variety pack of content for our podcast. So as always, thank you so much for joining us this week. This has been Psycho 2 from 1983.
Damn.
If you like what you heard, please consider giving us a 5-star rating on iTunes. It means the world to us, and it helps us stay, you know, top of mind on with iTunes and the algorithm and all that bullshit. If you are so inclined, you can also follow us on social media and stay up to date on all of the cool social media things that we're up to. We try to go to a lot of, especially as we're going into Halloween.
Yeah, you're going to see a lot of content on there.
Yeah, well, also, you know, if we go, you know, and we live in LA, so we try to go to, you know, Halloween-themed bars, or we try to go to horror-themed events and stuff like that. So you can see what we're up to there. You can find us on Instagram, which is at Horrible People's Podcast, which is HORRORBLE People's Podcast. And then you can find us on Twitter, which is at Horror People Pod. And then you can follow Anthony on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler. And then you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop.
Damn.
Yeah.
We fucking, yeah, that's get us, get at us. Come on,
so,
guys.
So, other than that, have a fantastic rest of your week, and we will catch you next week for October.
See you fucks in Halloween season. Bye-bye.
Woo! Bye, guys.